For those who didn't know, Rabbi Pelkowitz, who passed away this morning, early this morning, was such a prince of a man. I had the unbelievable opportunity when I was in the White Shul for 4 years to sit next to him almost every Shabbos. We had two chairs next to each other. We talked a lot during davening, Litzareni Harav, but you know, we had a lot to talk about, and I didn't see him during the week. And it was a very special privilege, really, to spend so much time with him and hear his insights on so many different things that were going on. He was such a prince of a man, such a Bal Midos, such a Bal Derech Eretz, such a gentleman. Anytime you spoke to him about anything that was going on, he just has such a calm way of dealing with everything. And very often I would discuss with him some of the difficult things that were going on with my father, some of the things that were happening that were of more global proportion, and he always had such a calm demeanor whenever he was talking about it, even though I was agitated at times. But he always had such an amazing way of approaching everything that you brought up with him. As many of you know, he was a master darshan who had such a clarity of speech, such a clarity of thought, such a thoughtful person and so much wisdom. And I also felt that he always had such a clarity of purpose and mission in everything he did. He always understood that this is what I'm supposed to do, and he was very true to that mission. He was an ish emes. Everything you spoke to him about, there was never a discussion about politics and all the cheshbonos that you have to make and who politically do you have to satisfy. That was never a part of the conversation. It was always, what is the emes, what is the truth, and what are you supposed to do, and what are you supposed to say? I remember I spoke to him before I came to the shul here, and I said, you know, I'm going to have to change my style a little bit. I don't know if the shul in Woodmere is the same as the shul in the White Shul. And we started to discuss it, and he said, why would you change anything? If your true nature is to say what you feel is the right thing to say, why would you change your style at all? Whatever you would say here that's truthful, you should say over there that's truthful. Why would it make a difference? And he made a big impression on me. This past Purim, I brought my children. We go every year to Rabbi Pelkowitz. We tried to go also before Rosh Hashanah every year. A couple of times a year we went. And I brought my children just a week and a half ago to deliver Shalach Manos to Rabbi and Mrs. Pelkowitz on Purim. So I was telling them beforehand how it's such a unique opportunity that we have the chance to go visit Rabbi Pelkowitz, who's such a Zakein Muflag. He's 96 or 97. I don't know exactly how old he was. But I explained to them that this is a person who really saw people who were around in previous generations and who was inspired by them. And I was explaining to my kids that we should try and, if he's up to it, we should try and get a bracha from him. It's a unique privilege that we have. We don't often meet people who are of this stature and of this nature. So we came in. We happened to be very lucky that afternoon on Purim when we came, he was in such a good mood. And he was so awake and he was healthy and he was so happy. So his children said it was very unusual. Apparently he had a very good day that day. So we were very excited, and we were sitting there. He was giving my children candies and cookies and offering different things. And then I said to him, you know, I told my kids that it's such an opportunity for us to be with you, and I got them very excited about the fact that we hope we're going to ask you for a bracha. So we're happy to see that you're feeling well enough to have a conversation. Maybe you'll give my children a bracha. And he said, he called my two older boys over, and he told them the following. He said, the two of you, he said, come from a very rich legacy. And he said that myself, he said, I'm an old man, but I've learned Torah from your great-grandfather, and I've learned Torah my life from your grandfather, and I've also learned Torah from your father. And he said, that's a very strong Shalshelas HaMasorah that you come from. And he said, your grandfather taught you that you should live a life of teaching Torah, which is teaching Torah with elegance. That's what he said. And he told my kids that he gives them a bracha that they grow up one day to at least appreciate what it means and how special it is to come from such a Shalshelas HaMasorah. I was thinking to myself, I don't know exactly how to explain it to a 7-year-old what the Shalshelas HaMasorah actually is and what it means that somebody actually learned Torah from 3 generations of rabbis. It's I guess, a unusual kind of perspective. But something that really hit me was, here is a very well-accomplished Talmud Chacham and rabbi and personality who built this community, who's sitting and telling my children that he learned Torah from me. It was a pretty humorous statement. You know, I do remember on occasion when it just showed his humility, you know, that he was telling my kids, they don't know anything, they don't know who he is. And he was telling my kids, like, yeah, of course, I'm also a student of your father. And I was amazed at that a person is so humble after all that he accomplished, that he was able to have that kind of perspective and to give that over to my children just to try to make them feel that they are part of something very special. And I really cherish that. I do remember on occasion when I was in the White Shul, and I have to say I identified very much with what Rabbi Mati Neuberger said today at the Levaya for those who were there. He was saying how it's very uncomfortable when you get up to speak from the pulpit in the White Shul. When I was there, so Rabbi Polkowitz was there every Shabbos, and Rabbi Feiner was there, and both of them are amazing orators and have a lot to say. And it's a very unusual privilege to be able to speak in their presence, but it's a very frightening privilege as well to try to figure out what to say that they will be satisfied with. Both of them have very different styles. Both of them are critical in very different ways. And I remember on occasion, I would turn around, Rabbi Polkowitz would give me a face, you know, you're doing all right, just keep going. And on other occasions, I would sit down and he would turn to me and say, Shai, that was a drusha? Come on. You know, so he was an ish emes. He was an honest person. And he really, I appreciated that so much about him. And he always tried to give very constructive criticism. He was a very critical person when you asked him for it. And I grew tremendously from that relationship with him and from the time I spent with him. So he was a giant of a person. And he was so humble and so simple. And somebody mentioned today at the Levaya another story that I was very amazed by, that you'll notice that he was 96 years old and he was a musmach of Torah Vadas, and he never grew a beard. And one of the grandchildren said today that they asked him, at some point in his life he was in Avelis for somebody, I don't remember who they said, and he started to grow the beard. So they asked him, you know, it looks nice on you, why don't you keep it? So Rabbi Polkowitz responded that when he went into the rabbinate, his Rebbe, Reb Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, told him that now we're in the 40s, and there's no way you're going to relate to American Balabatim if you're going to grow a beard. So you're not allowed to grow a beard. In order for you to be successful, you have to look like one of them. So that's what he told him. So he said, this is what my Rebbe told me in the 1940s when I started. As much as I love it, and as much as I want to keep it, how can I go against what my Rebbe told me to do? And that was an amazing testament to his incredible humility. He had accomplished so much at that point in his life. He was an elderly statesman on his own, and still, he had that picture in his mind that this is what his Rebbe told him to do, and that's what he was going to continue to do, and that's the way he went through life. And it was really just a true testament to what his personality was really all about. He was just an honest person who cared so much about the traditions that he had and the Mesorah that he was given and the Rabbeim that he learned from. And it was just a very humbling privilege to have time spent with him and to talk to him, you know, the many, many times that I had the opportunity to do so throughout my years in the White Shul. So on the loss of great people, there's supposed to be a great significance that we put toward that end as well. The Gemara says in Maseches Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Ches that we know that there are four public rabbinic fast days that we observe throughout the year. So one of those is Tisha B'Av, and one of those, as we know, is Tzom Gedalia. So the Gemara says, isn't that strange? Tisha B'Av is in commemoration of the Churban Beis Hamikdash. Tzom Gedalia is in commemoration of the fact that somebody, Gedalia ben Achikam, was killed in the Beis Hamikdash. Okay, those are not of equal proportion. One individual is killed, and you make a fast day, and when a Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, you make the same public fast day. So the Gemara says, L'lamedcha, it is meant to teach all of us, Sheshkula misasan shel tzadikim kisreifas Beis Elokeinu, that we should understand that when a tzaddik, when a great person passes away, it is not only considered to be a personal loss to the family and to the community and to the close friends, but it is also considered to be a catastrophic, a devastating loss to the entire Jewish community all over the world. It is kisreifas Beis Elokeinu. And the Gemara says, yes, there is nothing strange about the fact that when a Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, we actually have a public fast day, and we will have the same reaction when one very righteous person is taken from this world in a tragic way, because we assume that that also is considered of acute and of severe consequence to the Jewish people as a whole. So the Meshech Chachma points out that over here the Gemara says that it is considered kisreifas beis elokeinu, it's the same. And the Meshech Chachma points out that the Medrash writes in Eicha that it is even greater, it is even more severe than sreifas beis elokeinu. So Meshech Chachma tries to deal with whether it's considered worse or it's considered equal, but either way, we consider this to be of very serious proportion, a very serious consequence, when we have not only the destruction of a Beis Hamikdash, but when we have the loss of life of a great Talmud Chacham, of a great leader, a great tzaddik, we assume that that is something that has great consequences for the Jewish people. As much as the Gemara says that is supposed to be a painful experience, it is considered like Sreifas Beis Elokeinu, there is some sort of positive element that the Gemara shares with us as well. When we go through a experience of Misas HaTzadikim, the Gemara Mo'i Katan Daf Chavches says the following, Amar Rab Ami, Lama nismecha misas Miriam leparshas Parah Aduma. We just read Parshas Parah this past week. So if you look in Parshas Parah, right before the story of Parah Aduma, of being metara ourselves, the Gemara says, we have the story of the death of Miriam Hanaviah. Well, says the Gemara, why are those two stories right next to one another? What do they have to do with each other? Lomar lach, says the Gemara, comes to teach you, ma Parah Aduma mechaperes, that just like Parah Aduma is able to be a purification for us, it's able to give us an atonement, af misasan shel tzadikim mechaperes. So too, the death of righteous people is also in some way considered to be a kapara. And the Gemara goes further and says, not only do we learn this from the fact that the death of Miriam is put right next to the story of the Parah Aduma, but the Gemara also says, lama nismecha misas Aaron lebigde kuhuna. Why is it that Aaron HaKohen's death is put right next to the story of the Kohanim wearing the bigde kuhuna? Says the Gemara, ma bigde kuhuna mechaprim. Just like when the Kohanim wear the bigde kuhuna and they do the avoda while wearing them, it serves as an atonement for the Jewish people. Af misasan shel tzadikim mechaperes. So too, when tzadikim pass away, it is considered to be an atonement. It is considered to be a process of purification as well. It is not just this terrible tragedy, but it is also something positive that comes as a result. We have in Parshas Vayishlach, Torah tells us that Yaakov Avinu vayiven sham mizbeach. Yaakov Avinu builds a mizbeach. Vayikra lamakom el beis el, and he calls the place where he built the mizbeach beis el. Why? Because that is where he had his first encounter with the Ribono Shel Olam when he was running away from his brother Esav. Right after that, the very next pasuk, Yaakov Avinu builds a mizbeach and he calls the place Beis El. Right after that, we're told that Tamas Devora Menekes Rivka. Devora passes away. Ask the Ramban. Devora passing away, what does that have to do with Yaakov Avinu's mizbeach? Why are those two parshios put next to each other? Explains the Kli Yakar on Chumash, the answer is based on this Gemara Moed Katan. Yaakov Avinu built a mizbeach, which obviously brings him closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which obviously serves as a place for him to gain an atonement. It serves as an opportunity for him to purify himself and to repair his relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So too, writes the Kli Yakar, the death of Devorah, this great Menekes Rivka, who is such a great tzadekis, who is such a special woman, that also is a way of having an opportunity to gain an atonement. So the story is told, I forgot which biography I read it in, but the story is told of the Brisker Rav. So the Brisker Rav, in the very end of his life, was on his deathbed, and he had a number of Talmidim who were around, and he turned to his son, and he said, this year we're going to have two Yom Kippurs, one after the other, without any break in between. And nobody knew what he was referring to. They thought he had some dementia, they thought he didn't really understand what Yom Kippur was, and they didn't ask any questions, they just left it as it is. It just so happens to be that the Brisker Rav passed away on Erev Yom Kippur, right before Yom Kippur itself. And the Talmidim understood that that's what he meant. That when a Tzaddik, when a Talmud Chacham passes away, it's considered like a Yom Kippur. It's considered like a day of atonement. And what the Brisker Rav was teaching them is that this year we're going to have two Yom Kippurs, one after the other without a break, because I'm going to pass away on Erev Yom Kippur, and then you're going to have the other form of Yom Kippur. But as we know, this is really what it is considered to be, not only a tragedy, but it's also considered to be an opportunity for tremendous growth and tremendous kapara when we have the death of a tzaddik. So it's a little bit of a troubling statement that the Gemara says that we get an atonement on the occasion of the death of a tzaddik, because we have yet another passage in Chazal which seems to indicate otherwise. So the Gemara says in Maseches Sanhedrin, tzaddik avad min ha'olam, when you have a tzaddik who passes away from this world, a tzaddik who is no longer with us, Rav Aliolam, it means that horrible things are going on in the world, and that's why the tzaddik was taken. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, Mipnei hara'a ne'esaf hatzaddik. Because of the horrible thing that happened, this is why the tzaddik was taken away. So, what is it? Ask the Shalal HaKadosh. Is it that we're so horrible that therefore the tzaddik was taken away from us? Is it a horrible time? Does that mean we're in for worse things to come? Or does it mean when a tzaddik passes away, it's an opportunity for us to grow, it's an opportunity for us to gain an atonement? Which way do we take it? How do we look at it? Explains the Shalal HaKadosh, it depends. It depends what our reaction, it depends what our response is after the tzaddik passes away. On the one hand, writes the Shalal HaKadosh, if you sit down and you think about what the life of the tzaddik embodied, when you think about what the life of this Talmud Chacham was all about, what it represented, and it inspires you, and it arouses you to want to be a better person in some way, to change you in some way, this person that passed away was such an ish emes. You know what? I'm going to be a little bit more careful in the way I deal with other people, in my way that I discuss business with them, and the way I deal interpersonal relationships. I'm going to be a little bit more honest. No more politics anymore. I'm going to be an ish shalom, an ish derech eretz. I'm going to be a gentleman. I'm going to talk to my spouse more respectfully. Different things that you can take away from the great life of a tzaddik. So you might say, I'm not going to take away that I'm going to start giving a drasha, I'm going to start giving a shir. I don't know how to do that. But that's not for everyone. There are different elements of the life of a great person that everybody can take away. My father always points out that there were many, many hundreds, thousands of talmidim of the Rav. It's coming up on the Rav's 25th yahrzeit. So my father always says that each talmid goes around and says that I am a accurate representation of what the Rav was. So my father has his version, and everybody else has their own versions, and they were all in the same shira at the same time, and they were all hearing the same words. So how could it be that everybody has their own feelings of what they feel is the right representation, the accurate representation? I once asked this to my father, how is it possible? Who's wrong? Are you wrong? Is the next guy wrong? Is everybody right? Is everybody wrong? So he said, no, he believes for the most part they're all right. Because the mark of an incredible person is that they're a multifaceted personality. And you're not going to have a person who sits as a student of that great individual who's able to take all of the qualities of the great teacher. It's too overwhelming. It's too much. So my father says, what I took out of him was very limited. I took one part. What another student was sitting in the same classroom as I did took a different aspect, a different element. Doesn't mean he's wrong, doesn't mean I'm wrong. Both of us were sitting there. We each had our own perspective. We each were able to take one part of him. My father always says, the Rav was a tremendous orator. He was an unbelievable speaker. My father says over the Vart from Rav Meir Shapiro that Rav Soloveitchik said over in a Yartzeit Russia. So Rav Soloveitchik spoke about how, why is it that the Ribbono Shel Olam allowed for the Luchos to be destroyed because of an Ayin Hara? Didn't he know that that was a possibility to happen? So why didn't he save the Jewish people from the Ayin Hara? Whatever, that was the question of Rav Meir Shapiro. And Rav Soloveitchik said it over. So my father told me there was a book printed by Bar Ilan University recently where they took four different svarim from four different students of the Rav. I don't know, I never saw this article, but he said, someone showed it to him, where they took that four different students of the Rav took the very same drasha that the Rav gave in the name of Rav Meir Shapiro, and they compared and contrasted all four of the ways that it was written up. And they wrote that my father was not the accurate representation of the Rav, because look, everybody else wrote it much better than he did, so obviously he missed the boat and he's not representing accurately some other things that the Rav said as well. So I asked my father, "New, so what's the answer?" So he said, the answer is, they're right. He said, I'm not a big speaker. He obviously goes around and speaks all over the world, and he gives shiurim and he teaches Torah, but he's not an orator. He doesn't have that skill that the Rav had. He said some of the other people who wrote over the drasha that the Rav gave wrote it with all the fluff and all the fancy lashonas that he used and everything. My father said, I just wrote down the crux of the vart, the bottom line. What is it? He wrote it in one paragraph, and that was it. So it's true. Everybody has their own perspective of what they take away. Writes the Shalah HaKadosh. When you experience something that's a overwhelming experience, when you have exposure to a personality that is so multifaceted, that has so many different parts to them, that has so many different components and so many things you can take away, said the Shalah HaKadosh, if you at least walk away from this tragic patira with something, if you at least take something away from that and you feel that I want to be inspired, I want to change myself in one way that I lead my life because of the life that I was exposed to by this great person, this great man or woman, then says the Shalah, it serves as an atonement and serves as a kapara. However, he says, if this happens and nobody is inspired at all and nobody is motivated and everybody just continues on with life the way it was beforehand, then says the Shalah HaKadosh, that's what the Gemara means when it says, Mipnei hara nesav hatzadik. Horrible things are going to come to the world, and because the tzaddik passed away, life is only going to get worse. So it depends, says the Shalah, we all have the opportunity to make that choice. Whenever we encounter such an experience, we have the opportunity to make the choice for ourselves and to determine whether or not we are going to walk away with something positive, or we're just going to leave it and not change the way that we live our lives at all. Yeah? When we talk about the Asare Haruge Malchus, there's a different issue than the one you raise, and that is a very important dialogue that took place between the Malachim on the occasion of the Asara Haruge Malchus, the 10 great tzaddikim who were killed, and the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. So we are told on that occasion that the Malachim respond almost in a very arrogant way. The Malachim turn to God and they say, Zu Torah v'zu Schara. This is what happens. Rabbi Akiva learns his whole life and he dedicates every moment of his life toward the future of the Jewish people, and this is what you give him? This is the payment that he gets? You just go and you destroy him like this and with so much suffering? And God responds to him and he says, Emeshma kol acher, if I hear anybody else who opens their mouth, Efoch es ha'olam kula lamayim, I'm going to turn the whole world upside down, I'm going to drown the world, everyone's going to be killed. So what kind of response is that? Many Mefarshim have asked, what, like God had to, you know, talk back to them? You talk to me like that, I'm going to talk back. I'm going to get the last word. That's what it sounds like, but obviously it's not really what was happening. So what was this dialogue all about? So I think I saw once in the name of Rav Meir Shapiro that he suggests the understanding could be as follows. If the Ribbono Shel Olam said, if you guys don't stop, I'm going to destroy the world and turn it into nothingness and I'm going to drown everyone out and that's going to be the end of the existence of the world and of humanity, that means that the world was deserving of that, says Rav Meir Shapiro. It means the world, God felt, was actually deserving of that. So God said, you have two options. You can either keep quiet, and I'm just going to take this tzaddik, the Asara Haruge Malchus, and because of them, I'm going to save the entire world. Or if you keep bothering me, and if you keep asking questions, and you don't like the decision that I made, I'm going to have to go back to plan A, which is to destroy the entire world. So God was teaching us on that occasion that it's the decision that he makes every once in a while. So you'll say, why is it fair? You'll say, why does it make sense? Why should his children suffer? Why should they be left as Yisrael Men Almanos? These are all good questions. And like the Sefer HaKuzi rewrites, Ili Yedativ Hayisiv, if I knew the answers to these questions, I would apply to be God myself, but I don't. And there are many, many calculations in heaven that we don't fully understand, but that, said Rav Meir Shapiro, is what we learn from the story of the Asara Haruge Malchus. So, the death of Tzadikim, as we said, can be in some way a redemptive process that can serve as an atonement for the Jewish people. We mentioned before that there's one caveat. The Gemara says in Moed Katan that Ma Bigdei Kohuna Mechaprim, Big Day Kuhuna, when the Kohanim are wearing the Big Day Kuhuna, they are mechaper, they atone for the Jewish people. Af misasan shel tzadikim mechaperes. So too, the death of great people is mechaper, is able to give us an atonement as well. So one of the Chassidish Svarim on Chumash, one of the Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov writes, that is the caveat, that's what it's all about. The Gemara says, Big Day Kuhuna are mechaper, and therefore, just like they're mechaper, so too, we get an atonement when a tzadik or a great tzadik passes away. So he writes, when are Big Day Kuhuna Mechaper? If you have a set of Big Day Kuhuna that are just sitting in the closet and you're doing nothing with them and the Kohanim are not wearing them and there's no avoda going on, obviously they do not give the community an atonement. The only time Big Day Kuhuna can actually be effective is if they are being worn, if they are being used. And therefore he writes, this is the caveat that the Torah means to teach us about Misa Satzadikim as well. Experiences like these are only going to be meaningful, they're only going to be powerful, if we commit ourselves to cling and to follow the messages of the great person and the legacy, if we pledge that we will adopt and we're going to preserve the life mission of that person and some aspect of our lives is going to change for the positive, for the better, only then is the Misa of the Tzaddikim considered to be an opportunity for Kapar. But otherwise, it really will just go by us and nothing will really change at all. I always feel when we have opportunities like these to appreciate and to understand what the life of a great person was to us, it is also a time for us not just to mourn, but it's a time for us also to begin to appreciate the tzaddikim and the role models and the talmidei chachamim that we have in our lives that are still here. We don't always have to wait until somebody passes away to begin to talk about all the great virtues, all the great personality that they had, and all the great representation that their life is all about. We are fortunate to interact with great people all the time. And we all have role models, and we all need to have role models, and it's very important. Like the Gemara says in Maseches Brachos, that La'olam yadar adam b'makam rabo. A person should always live in the vicinity of somebody that they look up to. You know, for some of us, it's much easier. People ask, it's an interesting question. Guys in Smicha very often call me up, Smicha guys in YU, they think I'm a big expert. You know, I'm the big hotshot. I was in the field for 5 years. I don't know what the big deal is. So I always find it interesting that they're calling me in the first place. But one of them once asked me a question. I was so taken aback. He said, you know, how do you not get, like, how do you not become a hothead from being in the rabbinate? And I don't know. I find this to be a very humbling experience. People ask you questions all the time. You don't know the answers. I don't know. I don't know what's such a hothead about this position. And you're being trampled on all the time when you give a bad drasha. They tell you you give a bad drasha. When you say the wrong thing, they're down your back. I don't know. So one of the things that I mentioned to him is, I think there's a major distinction between those of us who are fortunate to have positions which are still in the community that is close enough in vicinity to our Rabbeim, and to those of us who have positions out of town. It's a big difference. So imagine you go to a position, and I'm not calling out anybody out of town, I don't mean anyone in particular, But I just mean, I think there's a major difference. Imagine you go to a position out of town, and you are it. You know how to read Chumash Rashi, and no one in your shul knows even how to do that. You're being Makariv everybody, and they're looking at you like, wow, you know, you're the great Messiah, you're the great Moshe Rabbeinu who just came down from heaven. You are teaching them everything. You are the everything, you're the everybody, you're putting the minyan together, you're laning, you're davening, you're At a certain point, after 5-10 years in that position, it gets to you. I understand. There's no reminder that's built in of who you really are and not losing a sense of self. I said to this guy who called me up, I have the opportunity to live in a community where I have people who are much greater than me all over the place. I have the opportunity to live in a community where I go to a wedding probably once a week, where I bump into my own teachers, where my father's at the wedding and I am reminded by sitting next to him that you're a nobody. I don't care how long you've been in the rabbinate. I don't care how great you think you are. I don't care how great the people in your community think you are. You're a nobody. He doesn't say it to me, but it's clear. You spend 5 minutes with a person of greatness, so you understand that you're a nobody. But if you don't have that exposure, it's very easy for a person to get lost and to lose their sense of self and to have a lack of appreciation for who really is a great leader, who is a great role model, and who perhaps might be lacking a little bit. And that is exactly what the Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos. La'olam yadur adam b'makam rabo. When choosing a place to live, you have to look for a place where you're going to be able to have a role model that you can look to, that you can always understand. There's a bar that's set high. There's a person who has expectations of me. There is somebody I'm going to have to answer to. It's not that you have to do confessions to the person you look up to, but it means there's somebody who can keep you in check. There's somebody who will call you out when you make a mistake. I know that I have a friend who moved down to Boca Raton, Florida. And the community in Boca is a very beautiful community. And he told me his first year in the shul, he was davening there. He was, not everybody knew who he was yet. He just moved down there. And he was living in New Jersey at first. He said he moved down there. And one day he wasn't feeling so well, and the rabbi called him that afternoon and said, we missed you at Shacharis this morning. He said, Rabbi, I'm telling you, I've never missed a minyan ever since that phone call. Lo'olam yadur adam b'makam rabo. You have to live in a place where there can be accountability, where there can be somebody who you look up to, who has an understanding of where you're holding, and when you're slipping, who will understand that that's what's going on. And that's what I felt all the years that I spent with Rabbi Pelkowitz. He was always a person who was able to instill a sense of yashrus, a sense of emes, a sense of truth, a sense of understanding that there's a way that you deal with people, there's a way that you're expected to interact with them, there's a way that you're supposed to teach Torah, there's a way you're supposed to communicate messages. You don't yell at people and you don't scream at them. That's not the way we communicate meaningful messages to anybody. There is a way of doing it with Diracher Darchei Noam. That's what he always told me, that there's a way to do it which is pleasant, there's a way to do it which is elegant, and that's a very important thing to consider. The Medrash says, commenting on the pasuk in Mishlei, Holech el chachamim yechkam. A person who goes to a chacham will become smart. So what does that mean? The Medrash says, really? It just works by osmosis. If I spend time in Stephen Hawkins, right? The person who just passed away today, the other great giant who passed away. So what are you going to say? If you spend time around this person, I'm going to become a physicist? It doesn't happen that way. You have to spend years studying. So the Medrash says, no, that's not what it means. What it means is, Mashal ami shenichnas v'chanuso shalbosem. You have a person who goes to a mall and sees there's a store that sells perfume. So you walk around and you start, looking at this, looking at that. Ends up, ultimately, you don't buy anything. It's too expensive or you don't like anything. You walk out of the store without any items in your hands. Says the Medrash, you're going to smell good even if you didn't buy anything. Because by spending time in that environment, it's going to make an impression on your life as well. So it might be a short-term impression, but it's going to make some sort of impression. Ve'ein reach zaz mimenu kal hayom. And says the Medrash, that's what it means, holeich el chachamim yechkam, that a person who spends time with great people, a person who surrounds themselves with role models, and who understands that life is meant to learn from these great people. So even if you don't learn everything from them, even if you don't take all the messages that their life really represented, you still have the opportunity to walk away as a more perfected personality. You are still impacted in some positive way, even if you're not up to the level of taking everything, but at least you take something away. I remember I once saw in the Sefer Pardes Yosef that he writes a story about a community in Europe that was looking for a rav and they couldn't get a rabbi. And they were just a horrible community. They weren't interested in listening to anything that the rabbi said, and it was just terrible. But it was a bizayin. How are they not going to have a rabbi? Yom Naram are coming up. What are they going to do? So the next time they had a big Talmud Chacham who passed through the community, he had to stop overnight to wherever he was going. So they started to discuss with him, maybe you want to become the rabbi here. And he said, why would I want to become the rabbi here? What's special about this community? They said, oh, do you know, come, we're going to show you the cemetery. He said, why are you showing me the cemetery? They bring him to the cemetery in the outskirts of the city, and they show him, look, this is the matseva of the Hele Gittaz, and this is the matseva of the great Rabbi Kiva Eger, and this is the matseva of the great Magen Avram, and they're showing him, like, every great tzaddik and Talmud Chacham is buried here. He says, you know what, sign me up. Obviously, if the Taz and the Magen Avram and Rabbi Kiva Eger, everybody felt this is the community where they belong, I'll be the next one. So he signs up for the job, and he's there a couple of weeks, and he says to himself, this doesn't make any sense. How could it be these people are such amaratzim, they don't know anything about anything? You're telling me that Taz was your rabbi? You're telling me Rabbi Kiva Eger was the rabbi? Can't be. And then he says to himself, what do you mean? Rabbi Kiva Eger was from Posen, and the Taz was from somewhere else, and everybody, how could it be they all ended up here? It doesn't make sense. He said, no, you made a mistake. What it means is they're all dead here. They never lived here. The Taz never was alive in our community. We've never heard of him. We don't care about him. He's in the cemetery. The Magen Avram, we don't care what he has to say. We were never interested in what he has to say. He's in the cemetery as far as we're concerned. And they explained to him, this is perhaps what it means in the Gemara. Lo yada ish es kvurasa by Moshe Rabbeinu. What does it mean? Nobody knew exactly where Moshe Rabbeinu was buried? How could it be? Nobody was able to figure out. All the archaeologists, all the scientists, no one was able to pinpoint the exact makam ha-kvura. So this Talmud Chacham said what it means is, as far as we're concerned, Moshe Rabbeinu never died. He's still here. My father says over the story about when they wanted the Rav to contribute to the volume that they were writing in honor of, in commemoration of some big yard site of the Rambam. I don't know how many years it was, but a couple of hundred years. And they were writing a special volume in Harvard in honor of that very special day, very special year. So they asked the Rav to write an article, and the Rav turned to the Talmidim at the time and he said, I wasn't aware that the Rambam died. As far as we're concerned, the Rambam is alive and well, and he's here, and the Taz and the Magen Avram and everybody else, it's a part of who we are. It's a part of what our legacy is, and we take away the messages and the lessons of their lives, and we hope that this is something that we can take for ourselves by the loss of great people as well, which is what the Yerushalmi tells us. Ein osim nefashos letzadikim. There's no reason to have a big cemetery that's going to be a big coliseum around, you know, sometimes they have a king or queen who's buried, or a presidential library. So there they have a whole big thing that's around the casket of this dead president. Wonderful. Says the Yerushalmi, we don't need that. Divreim hein heim zichronam. By talking about the great legacy that they left over, by the talking about the Torah that they taught all of us and inculcating that into our lives and our families, that is the greatest way to memorialize a person who was a great individual throughout their life. Let's just close with a tefillah. The pasuk says at the end of Parshas Achrimos, after we're instructed about all of the avodah that has to be done by the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, so we're told, "V'ha'isa zos lachem l'chukas olam." He has to go into the mikvah and out of the mikvah, and this carbon and that carbon, ketores into the azara, into the kodesh hakadoshim, in and out all day long. Very complicated avodah. After all that, says the pasuk, he does all this, the chaper al b'nei Yisrael mikol chatosam, to gain an atonement for the Jewish people, achaz bashana, once a year. Very strange terminology. Once a year? Of course it's only once a year. Yom Kippur only comes around once a year. When the Torah describes our experience of sukkahs, does it say, you know, and you should sit in the sukkah for this amount of days, and this is how many meals you should have? Only once a year. Of course it's only once a year. The Torah gives me a date of when it's supposed to happen. It makes sense that it's only once a year. When we observe Pesach, does the Torah say you should only do it on Tezayin Nisan, and that's when it's going to be, and it should only be done once a year? What do you mean once a year? Of course it's only once a year. Tes Vav Nisan, Yud Dal Nisan only comes once a year. So maybe perhaps the understanding is as follows. We ask the Ribono Shel Olam that Yom Kippur for us should only be Achaz Vashana. We should not have to suffer through a secondary Yom Kippur by having Misas HaTzadikim. The Ribono Shel Olam here says, V'haisa zos l'chukas olam. May it be my will, the Ribono Shel Olam says, that Yom Kippur this year will only be one Yom Kippur, the way it's supposed to be observed, without any death of great righteous people, that we shouldn't have to endure any suffering, we shouldn't have to go through any of that, and we should have the opportunity only to gain a kapara achaz bashana, once a year, the way it is supposed to be done, based on the instructions given by the Chumash itself.